Welcome to episode 42 of the Midlife Pilot Podcast. It's a show where we talk all things aviation, especially for those who are starting their aviation journey in midlife, like us. This podcast is really just about sharing our experiences and sharing the greater community's experiences as a midlifer. Doesn't matter if you're a student pilot, a seasoned veteran, or just an enthusiast who may want to learn. We're glad you're with us. My name is Ben, occasionally referred to as the Sage and never by my children. I'm an instrument rated pilot here in the Atlanta metropolitan area. I started flying when I was 48 years old and currently working on my commercial rating. As always, I have my trusty co-hosts. We have Brian, a private pilot deep in the heart of Music Row in Nashville. How's it going, Brian?
Good, Ben. How are you today? I learn something more about you every day. You know, like I had no idea that that you were working on your commercial. Just kidding.
Well, not lately, but we'll talk about
that. That's my dig at you. But yeah,
that's exactly right.
Good to see you, man. Good to see you.
Glad you're here. Also from the left coast, the west coast, the best coast, sport pilot extraordinaire, our friend Ted Flysport. Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing?
How's the egg?
The egg is very good. Nice. It's a good week for the egg.
So for those in the audio world, this is a live show.
Weeks are good for the egg. Sorry, we'll talk over Ben here.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Just had a little bit of fun with it. Yeah. Yeah, it's just a good week for the egg. We'll talk about that.
It's a good week. Good. Well, I can't wait to hear more about it. So this is a live show. We broadcast on YouTube every Tuesday night, at least that's the plan, at 8 p.m. Eastern time. You can go visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@MidlifePilotPodcast. We have a live chat. We've got a pretty active chat tonight, looks like. We love getting the questions and reading the comments. So, and you can get this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from. So let's take off here. Excuse the expression. I want to see how everybody's doing. Brian, we'll start with you tonight. And next week we'll go with Ted first. But what are you up to? You had some fun tonight on the radios?
Yeah, I was telling you about that. Should have known you would have brought it back up. No, I did get chastised by the local Delta controller here today for stepping on people. But there is a dead zone where you just can't, there's an interference and you just can't really tell that you're stepping on people. And he was pretty grumpy. By the time I got in there, I realized he was doing, you know, real work. He had jets and small planes and squeeze plays and all the things going on. And then when we got down, I realized he was on his own and running ground and giving clearances. And, you know, he was just doing everything. I can't even imagine. So,
yeah.
He's traditionally pretty grumpy, but today I realized that he was justified. brought the plane down I'm hoping to go on Thursday, if the weather holds up, to the Swift fly-in in Athens, Tennessee, which is going on, I think, Wednesday through Sunday or Saturday. And, you know, there's a small part of my brain, small part of already a small bit of real estate, but I love the Swift aircraft. I'm mesmerized by them. And after getting my tailwheel, and I don't know, I just feel like that's something I really want to get closer to. And so the idea that there's a fly-in that's, it's kind of a bit in between you and I, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, I've got to go see them all, you know, because that's where the museum, there's a Swift museum there and all that. I've been meaning to do that anyway. So I just thought, what better way to sort of satisfy my Swift curiosity than to go during this fly-in and see what's going on. And maybe I can beg somebody to take me up in one. I just think they're the coolest planes. So
I like them a lot. I agree with you. It's my fear of going to a thing like that is it might be the most expensive weekend or day that I've ever had because I want to buy one.
Yeah. They're not crazy expensive, but they're the kind of thing where almost like Cessna 172s or something in the sense that it's like, yes, you can find one cheap and right. You know, it's going to need a lot of things. And then you can find some that are so tricked out that it's kind of insane.
Glass panel, IFR capable, you know, Swift. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But they're just, I don't know. They're just so cool. So anyway, I'm thinking about doing that on Thursday, and then, you know, otherwise just been doing all the things. I'm still recovering from my Marfa trip, and I did publish a video about that. And then I've been kind of getting caught up on all the life that I decided to put aside to do that trip.
You came back to Earth after landing on the moon?
Yes. Yes. And YouTube has said that it keeps putting a warning about Apollo misinformation or something. So I must be doing something right.
Well, you're talking about landings and you mentioned the moon. So that takes care of both.
Yeah. Right. But yeah. What about you, Ted?
Oh, well, you know, most weeks have been adventurous. I'm trying to squeeze out the flights before the weather really changes here. But I did a couple of things that were interesting. I landed at my first airport that used Multicom, which is, you know, you've got your tower frequency, you've got your Unicom or your CTOP frequency, and then you've got no frequency listed. It's a small airport, wild, wild west. So it was a private air park. There was a mechanic at it. And I had to dig back into my memory, and I thought Multicom was a thing. And I looked it up and like, oh yeah, that is like the default that you use in those cases. But I've never had to think about that since it being on the test.
Mm. What were you going to this airport for? To see a mechanic? Oh,
I was dropping off a fellow pilot who does not fly an egg for some, so he could get his work done there. And then we flew back home together. Then I went for lunch and was at a bigger towered airport and went to the restaurant there. And I saw some people struggling getting through the gate, and which I noticed there wasn't a sign on it that says what the code is to get back through the gate back to the airport. And I'd asked the waitress, you know, hey, what's the code? She gave me the code. So when those people walked in, I said, hey, just so you know, here's the code for that. And they're like, hey, can we just sit with you? And I was sitting alone. So I had two people sit with me. They introduced themselves as UFO pilots. That is the United Flying Octogenarians. They're well into their octogenarian age. Wow. I noticed that the UFO has a section for junior UFOs, which means you're 75 to 80. So a junior octogenarian, that's a pretty cool crowd to be in. They had a new plane they'd been building for the last 17 years.
That is so awesome.
Yeah. And then I'll show a final adventure here. I got a little video clip for you.
Oh.
Clear active taxi back runway 2. Whiskey Bravo, you did not see that.
I definitely did not see that.
Twin Ox Husky 6. Taxi back. Whiskey Bravo, you did not see that one either.
I certainly did not see it.
So I was practicing on at my local airport, and this guy was flying a tail dragger, and they may not have been the prettiest of landings. I was the only one there that saw him. I made sure to clip his tail number because no reason to get that out. But I thought that was a great little experience because I could see myself awesome. Doing the same.
Everybody's united to
in the same boat. Yeah. Ben, how about you? You flew this week, I know.
It's first time in 20 days. When I got back to the house, my wife looked at me. She said, I can tell you flew. You don't look grumpy anymore. So no, I just went in the rental airplane, the club plane, and went up into the mountains and just we'd done a hike about a month ago, and I marked it on my Garmin Pilot app. And then where there were some nice waterfalls. So then I went back and did a couple of orbits around it and took a few pictures and headed back. So it was only about an hour's worth of flying, but it was enough to get my mind back in the right place.
That's perfect.
Flying Yosemite O'Brien. I keep forgetting my headphones in my plane, and the club has a couple of has a pair of DCs with no ear pads. And after about 10 minutes, it's not uncomfortable. It's downright painful. So it's hard to hear over the radio as it is. So after an hour of flying, I was ready to be back on the ground with those headsets.
Yeah. So what is the club plane that you were flying?
It's a Cessna 172, which is qualified as a TAA, technically advanced aircraft. It's an N model with a 180 horsepower engine.
So what you call the little engine. Yeah.
What is it? 160?
No, it's 180.
Oh, it's a 180. Yeah. So it's got this STC for the 180.
It's STC. It's actually from the same company as that did my 182.
Does it have the, is the oil door, can you see where the old one was and the new one is?
No, they did a new cowling.
Okay. A pretty cool that I trained in was a 172 that had that upgrade, and it really helps.
Yeah.
What's the difference in the oil door?
It's amazing to me how much lighter it is than the 182 when it comes to landing. It's a huge difference. So
how was your landing?
I've not had a bad landing in that airplane, and I'm knocking on wood. I may never fly it again after saying that.
Yeah.
But they've all been, I mean, it's easy to slow it down, and the nose isn't heavy, which is what I'm used to in my airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So it just comes a little bit easier based on what I've been landing in the past.
Well, there's one way to guarantee a bad landing. That's, well, two ways. One is to talk about it, and the other is to have a passenger with you.
Yeah, that's, I've had one of our supporters, Nathan Ballard is the CFI in this club. And so he's actually witnessed me land it a few times. He's actually videoed it as well. But yeah, if I can bring one dull geek with me, it'll guarantee me a bad landing, because it seems like every time he's in the plane with me, we, look who's that joining us.
One final shout out here before we, move into the show. We've got OG midlife pilot, Chris Moran in here.
Who's that guy?
Yeah. Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. That's good. It's always good to have Chris around.
Absolutely.
We still talk on the phone as regular humans, but none of that's released to the internet, which is probably for the best.
You hang up first.
But yeah. So, well, let's get into, we got a lot to cover, man.
We do.
So, let's get into it.
So we thought, Chris, speaking of Chris, he and Brian earlier in their podcasting had scratched the surface on this, or maybe take a different tact. There'd been a call out just talking about what do you want to, how do you, you're on the couch, you have 0 hours. What do you do to get started to get your private pilot's license? And that's, we wanted to touch on some of those. You're a midlifer. Where do you start? What do you expect to do? And we thought we'd start chatting about that. And we'll just do a little round robin here, and we can talk about maybe some of the very first things that you do before you even go to a flight school, such as getting your medical.
Yeah. So let me start as the sport pilot here, which is, you don't necessarily have to get your medical before you start flying, but boy, you should research the medical and what's required to get a medical, and make sure that you qualify. Mental health issues, especially ADHD, complex depression. Wait, I'm not a doctor. Certain forms of diabetes are examples of things where getting a medical is very difficult.
I had a kidney stone in 2000, which was 18 years from the day I applied for my medical, or 17 years. And it didn't cause a problem, but it could have caused a problem. So there's a lot of things out there that can bite you. And one big recommendation I would make is go to AOPA's website. They have a very extensive review of medical things, but that cost me in my training, not getting that medical done before I started.
Yeah. At least be aware of what your personal issues may be with that before you get started.
I would go harder on that. Honestly, I would just say, don't even think about it. Don't even waste any of your time. Do not pass go. You're going to get it or you're not.
Yeah.
The only thing, if you go and you take five lessons and then go get it, or I don't know, whatever you would do otherwise, it's just going to be a heartbreak. I mean, you might as well. Ultimately we're all agreeing here. Just get your medical done first. But yeah. When I got my medical, it was the first place I had gone since coming out of the, it was like the first building that I'd gone in since COVID had kind of calmed down. it was the first thing that I was going to do, but I did that before my first lesson. I didn't do a discovery flight. I already knew, like, I'm going hard in the paint on this whole thing. But yeah, so I would say, I agree with that sentiment, but I would even go harder to say, just don't even bother doing anything until you know what that is. Now, if you already, I wouldn't, you know, do the research, because if you already know quite obviously that you have things that are going to eliminate you that are not interpretive dance, right? Like, it's just kind of like, I know, then you can at least go ahead and start pointing towards sport pilot or, you know, something. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Or know that you're going to have an adventure on your hands.
To put a finer point on it, and we can move on from it. I was running half marathons and full marathons up until about 2017. I was not on any medications whatsoever. But that kidney stone, 8 or 17 years prior, I had to go get a bunch of records. I was ready to solo while I was still working on getting my medical, and I couldn't solo until after I got it. And it is a tragic thing
seeing, when you see around the airport, you see students, and you're like, why haven't you soloed? And you realize, oh, they're kind of hanging around having a lesson every week just to stay fresh, hoping their medical comes through.
That was me. I think I soloed at 40 hours because this took so long. So that's why I'm a little bit more passionate about doing the medical. There's a lot of discussion in the chat. Do your discovery flight first and the medical, which is fine. That's fine too. You need to see if you like it or not, but if you have any inkling that you are going to like it, I would go hit that medical pretty quickly.
Yeah. Cool. So the other thing you want to do before, either before or at the time of discovery flight, I think it's before, is your budget and time expectations. Right. And I mean, you know, it'd be good to know
your budget, man. Just send it, worry about the money later. You know, you can always declare bankruptcy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think though, people don't talk about this much, but I do think that it's a good thing to have it clear with your spouse or your partner, or whatever, just, it's kind of like, if this thing takes, if I can get my medical and I can get signed up and if all these things align, I'm going to be likely, less present than I'd like to be for a period of time. So, having alignment, because I know that there's a lot of people, I've heard of a lot of people that have had, some resistance, they've kind of jumped into it, and then maybe they didn't have their ducks in a row with their spouse and managing that expectation about how much time and energy it takes. And ultimately, whether it's the spouse, job, whatever, I think it's what you said, Ted, have a realistic, generous outlook on how much time, energy, focus, money, everything that it's going to take. Don't let those things be discouraging, because I believe what you're saying, Ben, also makes sense, where it's just, you kind of have to just sort of send it a little bit. But there's no perfect wisdom here. And as Todd is saying here in the chat,
we got to wait a minute here,
because you won't ever fly.
Todd's got some great comments here. Don't do a budget. You won't fly. I definitely agree. I don't count my flights for that reason. I think Ben and I were talking about this the other day, and go ahead and run your numbers and everything else, but 10 to 20 grand is probably what you're going to be into. We can argue, we can look at specific numbers, everything else. That's just a ballpark of what you're talking.
And when you're having the wife discussion, this happened literally this on Saturday. My wife and I, we go to festivals all over the city, right? And she is really into pottery. She likes these little dishes and stuff. And she has these potterers that attend all these festivals that she's become friends with. And when I showed up, She's like, oh, I'm going to get another piece. And I'm like, you can buy all you want. And the ladies looked at my wife like, who is this guy? She goes, yeah, his hobby's a lot more expensive than mine. That's why he's letting me do this, because I don't ask him about his expenses. So you got to kind of build in that credit with a significant other.
Yeah. Todd rings in here again. He was going to do an online course of how to slow walk your partner into your life as a pilot. And yeah, there's some truth to that. Talking about the time though, I thought I might be getting into it for a less than a week. No big deal. Take part of a Saturday or Sunday. No big deal. Now the airport's 45 minutes away. You're going to leave another 45 minutes before that. So you've got plenty of time for traffic and to, check out the plane. Then you're going to have 45 minutes afterward, plus your post-flight debrief. It's a pretty good 5+ hour chunk just for an hour and a half flight with an instructor. And then you need to be doing that at least twice a week.
At minimum.
Yeah.
And talking about getting the spousal approval, another pro tip, don't take your wife up when you're doing lessons, especially when the lesson is steep turns and she's sitting in the back seat. That's not the way to introduce them to it. So I was hoping to show them how safe it was, but it kind of backfired.
I did something equally as bad. I had her come up in the back seat. It was, 95 degrees.
Right.
And I was just learning how to land. And so she's back there getting all bounced around and it's a sweat box.
And the good news is if they survive that, then they're going to be good to go for
everything's better. Everything's better.
I totally agree with you. The Discovery flight's going to be critical. Choosing a CFI is,
So what is a Discovery flight for a brand new student?
So an instructor is going to sit in the right seat, which is typically the co-pilot seat, and the left seat, you're going to sit in it. And that is the pilot seat. And he or she, let's be clear on that, is going to let you handle a lot of the aspects of steering the plane and flying the plane. And you're going to go fly around for an hour and he's going to show you some different, or he or she's going to show you different things about the airplane.
And they're going to try to get you to fly as much as possible and to make you feel like you flew as much as possible. It is very much a confidence boost and a bit of a sales tactic. And so you have a great time. And then you'll learn that you weren't actually flying most of that time.
They definitely tell you, you're doing great.
God, you did all of this.
You're a natural. No, a Discovery flight is exactly what it is. I don't think we need to spend too much time on it, but I mean, Google it. There's a gazillion things.
It's your chance to try out the school and the instructor. You do multiple of them.
Choosing a CFI is, there's no magic to it. It's, you're paying for a service. And you should be able to get along, but you also need to know that they have to lead you in a direction and you're going to have to take instruction from them. Yes. So there is that dance that you have to do with them. But, there's always going to be red flags out there that are going to, they're milking you for time and, they're maybe just punching a clock and building time to go to the airlines and they don't want to go half the time, whatever the case may be. But if you've got friends that fly, get recommendations for CFIs. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Looking for a sport pilot instructor was difficult. And I kind of canvassed out to people I knew, people that I knew. And then they eventually gave me the recommendation of who I went to. And when you're not around the aviation world, it is a little more difficult. Hopefully you're sitting here listening to this podcast. So hopefully you can find somebody that knows your local flying community.
Well, I would like to just add that it's a good idea, especially as a midlife pilot, when you're going through the process of getting the medical, setting up Discovery flights with maybe a couple of different instructors at different schools and all that sort of exploratory part of it. I think that what is critically important that I think more people, I had this attitude going into it, but I don't think that I didn't have any reinforcement that I really needed to double down on this, which is to say, you have to start with a mindset of, I own this process. I am paying for this. And it's real easy for people to be sort of overwhelmed by the whole thing and be hyper deferential to those who know more than they do or have more experience than they do. But ultimately, one thing that's different, I think, with midlifers versus maybe younger people is we've been through different business arrangements or different interpersonal dealings or things, and we know perhaps better than younger people because of our supposed wisdom that what it is to have ownership over a process and the accountability of that and the responsibility of that. And if you don't know, you know, it's like, if you're going to build a house, you may not be a carpenter, you may not be a plumber, you may not do HVAC, but you're going to have to learn some things about those things and learn how to manage those parties. And it's all on you. You're the one writing the check. You're the one who's counting on these results. And so I think that one thing that, again, you know, nobody told me to begin with, and I've always told other people that are friends of mine that started training, you know, is you have to own your training. That will feel uncomfortable at first because you don't feel like you have a right to or the knowledge to, but you have to do it. And so I think right away, get into that practice of owning the process.
Yeah. Mark Wendell Geek put up a comment that he should have fired his CFI way before he did, wish he'd owned the process more. And, you know, that can be true. It's hard to remember who the customer is in that case. Mm-hmm. The power dynamic is weird. On the other hand, what I found was it was great flying with a second CFI and a third CFI. And when I was into my training and get different advice from the different ones, they, you know, have different theories on how to do it. And it, you know, that can come in handy.
I think somebody that's sitting on the couch that's never been inside the fence of a general aviation airport, your analogy with the home builder and having to learn that process, I think is very relatable and just perfect the situation, because your spidey senses are going to go up when you think that you're getting taken advantage of when you get into the process. And as you said, you've got to own it, but you also have to know that if you're not getting a particular maneuver or if you're not doing something well, those instructors are going to try to help you get to where you need to be, but you need to stop making excuses and own your own issues and work to fix them.
Yeah. And what Todd's saying here about, wish my CFI had more of a plan, good advice might be, does your guy have a syllabus? That's exactly right. When I went into my training, I learned that the school had the back end of the sporties, the sort of school side of the sporties curriculum, has a very detailed syllabus with clear demarcations for completed sort of things and stage checks and, you know, all this stuff. And they had never used it. And I said, I want to do that. We're following that, you know, and I think that that's a huge thing. Thanks for mentioning that, Todd, because what it does is it takes the competing subjectivities out of it. There's a sanctioned body that has outlined, you know, a well-groomed path for this. And now you guys are teaming up to meet this sort of third party, thing, as opposed to what people's opinions are about what the best thing is to do. And I fully agree. If you can have an agreed upon syllabus, then that is massive. And keep track of your own requirements. Keep track of, you know, don't make them keep track of what you need. And as you get deeper into it, you know, we're just talking about how to get started, but I think that ultimately it's just about owning the process and then managing that process and staying with it. I came into every lesson twice as prepared. If I felt like things were straying, I would tell the instructor, like, what about this? I feel like we need to be doing this. And, you know, so you got to own it.
Yeah. I would have done better if there's a little more structure so that I was getting better feedback in that way as well. It would have worked better for my brain. Didn't realize that until I was done.
And that structure helped me process my task, because some of the tasks build upon others. You learn turns around a point, and you learn all these different maneuvers to help yourself in the pattern. And if we just started doing pattern work, it you know, I needed that structure. The other point that I think is very important that somebody that's never flown before, you said, you touched on it briefly, Ted, and I just wanted to put an exclamation point on it. Minimum, you have to fly 2 times a week. I set 3 times a week as my goal. One lesson would inevitably get canceled due to weather, but there were quite a few times we did get 3, and we progressed so much further by adding that one extra lesson in the week. It's because you're not spending any time going over what you've already learned. It's all still fresh. If you're not in a position to fly 2 to 3 times a week, then you may want to wait until you get to that point.
Yeah.
So Evan brings up a point here and then move on just a little bit. Did anyone do part 141 rather than 61? The problem with 141 for a midlife pilot is that it tends to be a lot more structured, maybe too much for a midlife pilot. It definitely works. What I have seen I know there's a school in town, not that I went to, that did it as 141, but they were as flexible as possible on the 141. They were only really using, and because they were signed off to be able to do it as 141. And that was a great way to go, that you're not kind of literally coming to the classroom every day type of 141 program. And, you know, if the weather changed or if they needed more, that was fine. You just did it. It wasn't that, you know, very rigid program.
Well, so Evan's putting in a lot of great feedback in here. Yeah.
He's just coming back from a great hike. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I just want to say, now this is not traditional advice on how to get the flying done. I'm not saying everybody should do this, but I think Evan had the long game, really mastered in his aviation path, because what he did is he had a son and then he raised that son to be an adult, and then his son became a flight instructor, and then he had his kid train him. Like this is
he did do his primary training with his son Sam, which I was teasing about in the chat earlier.
Yeah.
But that is definitely the long game, which is 20 years ago, you started this process so that he could be your commercial instructor.
Yeah.
I think it's important to mention here, because we have been talking about it, for the person that's 0 hours, part 141 versus what most of us do is part 61. And part 61 training just means you go on your own time basis. There'll still be a syllabus. A lot of the flight schools will have syllabi for you. But there's no time restrictions on there. So, but part 141 is a very structured program. A lot of the 141 schools are a classroom environment at an airport, and you're flying 2 or 3 times a day. It is often very expensive to do it that route.
Yeah.
Everything is prepackaged. So the price is what the price is, what the price is.
So once you have your instructor, you've logged your discovery flight, but let's just say, between that and your next flight, what are the things you need to do? Some of these are things that I think were things I was worried about first, which was, what should I do for a ground school? Does the airport have their own and they require you to go through it? Do they recommend one online? Do they require one online? What do I do here? What books do I need to get, right? And the first thing is, when you go to the Discovery flight, they'll tell you, hey, it's okay. What you need to do is go use Gold Seal, go use Sporties, go use M0A, whatever program. Please go check those out as well. They may not have a big preference, but check them out. See which style works best for you.
Absolutely.
And then the next thing is what books to get, right?
Right.
And the secret is, you don't actually need any books, especially to start, right? Like,
PDFs abound.
The PHAC, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, nice, big, thick, how to fly book, PDFs on FAA's site. So just FAA PHAC is all you have to Google to find it. And then isn't there another flying reference book? I can't remember. I thought there was a second one from the FAA, and I just can't think what it is.
Airplane Flying Handbook.
AFH. That's right.
So, for a second, I thought you were talking about
setting it up.
Aim. Yeah. I was like, there's a whole other thing, Ted, that's super important.
So there's the four things. There's PHAC, AFH, Airport Flying Handbook, or Airplane Flying Handbook, the FARs, which are the legal things, which are all online. I don't know what the best way to find those
are. There's the rules of the road and how to drive on the road. And that's basically what those delineations are. But ultimately, I think what we're talking about is the knowledge part of the whole process. And yes, you have to do the knowledge test. The word of advice there would be, and most pilots know this, but if you're just thinking about it, it may not occur to you. Don't wait to take that test. Try to get it done in the earlier part of your training. Don't wait until it's too late. There are people that end up delaying that and delaying it and delaying it, and then it becomes a monkey on their back while they're starting to prepare for check ride. And that is not what you want. You want to have that done well ahead of time.
I think I've heard of that more at 141 schools, where either they require it before you start or none of their students have it done the day before the check ride. I know that my school, and it seems like a lot of schools, kind of the tradition is that you get it done before you solo. You take that written test at that point. There's no requirement for it, but that seems to be.
There's a pre-solo written test.
I'm talking about the real.
Yeah.
The formal.
Yeah. So like, you know, my DPE said, if you haven't taken the written, I'm not going to schedule a check ride, which I understand. You know, I did mine pretty early on.
I did too. Yeah. It's sad to say, but there's nothing you're going to learn in the airplane that's going to have a question on that test. You don't have to go fly for a little bit to understand what the written information is about. So you get the written out of the way.
But I disagree with you on that, because I didn't. I think I needed some context for it.
And I guess it's easy for me to look back on it now, and it seems like it would be
school.
That way.
I didn't need no school.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's well, you know, my motto in high school was 2-0 and go. So that's probably tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
Well, and then later it was 1-9, and then it was 1-8, and then that was fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, expect to do your written sometime between either right before you start, certainly by the time you've soloed. Legally, you only need to do it before your check ride.
For sure.
But I think there's a strong recommendation to do it by solo time at the
latest, I guess. Absolutely. And then, okay, what's next? What happens?
So what happens in those first lessons? What does it feel like?
First flight lessons?
Yeah.
Let's say like 1 hour through 5 hours.
Yeah. Or 1 through 20, 1 through 10, 1 through 45.
Okay. Right. Depending.
The lessons are going to be 1.2 to 1.6 hours. So we're in that range of flying time,
lessons,
give or take. But what does it feel like? Like
it's drinking from a fire hose.
Chris. Yeah. Drinking from a fire hose. Yeah.
Most instructors are going to teach you climbs, descents, turns, just the very basic aerodynamics of navigating an airplane and moving it about.
What did it feel like to you, Ben?
Say again?
What did it feel like to you?
It felt like heaven. I couldn't take it all in. It wasn't, it was overwhelming. I didn't want the lessons to end. I was just amazed by it.
From about hour 5 to about 20, I was like, my brain will not figure this out. I'm not, there is no way that it's ever going to become natural about flying this. I'm banking to the right, and my reaction is to bank further to the right. Why can't I program my brain to do this? So I had a bunch of
let me ask you this
struggle.
Prior to your first lesson, have you ever flew in a general aviation airplane?
I had.
Okay. Brian, did you?
What's that?
Have you flown in a GA airplane prior to taking your first lesson?
Not in many, many, many years.
That'd be 20 years for me.
Yeah.
I have several friends that have planes and have been kind of mentors to me. And I knew going up with them that this was what I wanted to do. So when I got that opportunity, I was absorbing, I was in the moment. I was absorbing every bit of it. If he gave me an altitude to hold and I was 50 feet off, I'd beat myself up because I expected myself to be a perfect pilot. And he quickly corrected me on that as well, too, by the way. He's like, no, you're doing just fine. So
Evan had a good comment here of, in the early lessons, I thought I was keeping the plane in the air only through the force of my own concentration. Every lesson ended with a headache and a nap. Brian, you've said this before about what's the secret of, you know, handling an upset in a GA trainer plane? Just handling. Let go. Let the plane fly it.
Oh, just, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, stop trying. It's not resignation. It's actually the best thing to do. No, but I think that my experience in the early going was a little bit of kind of all the things that I'm hearing, right? Because there's so many highs and lows, you know. You can do something really simple and do it kind of well and feel really good 5 minutes in, and then something will happen 10 minutes in that fully deflates you and makes you feel like, I'm never going to get this. And it's just the peaks and the valleys are just really intense. Yeah. You know, I think that you have to be, you know, this is something I've said a lot of times, but, you know, and I'm trying to speak to things that are uniquely midlife. We are not good at being terrible at things at this stage in our lives. At this stage in our lives, we have chosen pretty much exclusively to only do things that we're good at and or comfortable with by and large. And so to all of a sudden be out there hapless, is just a real humbling and frustrating thing, you know? So, I think that no one, I was not, I mean, I tried, but there's not, it helps now that with all this camaraderie of listening to podcasts like this, I didn't have that, you know. I was on my own. So I didn't have anything to relate it to. So I just kind of thought I was losing my mind. You know,
I was in the exact same boat. Aviation 101 was maybe, I was 6 months into training when I discovered that.
Yeah.
I was in this period of struggling to land at high 20 hour range when I finally started looking at YouTube, to thinking that if I saw the site picture of landings on YouTube, maybe I'd start to figure it out. And it was after that I found the midlife world. But you know, that is what really helped me, was being somebody in the chat. There's some great chat in here if you're listening to the podcast version of it, but of everybody's experiences in this time range. But In that early COVID period, somebody else was mentioning this. It was just you and your instructor. There was nobody at the airport.
Yeah.
There's no way to see a fellow student who's also, you know, sweaty and crying at the same time.
If I could go back, I would say have more fun, you know, and not be so hard on yourself. Realize that you're going to have the struggles. You're going to feel like you can't do it at times. And then you got to forgive yourself, learn how to have a short memory, and get on with it. And then don't be so hard on yourself, you know, because you're just not used to being terrible at stuff, but now you are, and then you'll figure it out. But
We're going to bring in somebody from the community who has a little bit of advice. We've got a couple more mini topics before we wrap this up to talk about. And so let's bring in Nate here. This is Nate W. Welcome, from Nate. From SoCal. On YouTube, he's known as Cheapskate Aviation.
Cheapskate.
We'll link his YouTube down in the doobly-doo for that. But so Nate, what you did a lot better than at least myself, and
definitely me,
pretty guessing, I know Ben for sure in the same way, which was preparing for each lesson, right? What did you do?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't prepare as well as having a son 20 years in advance. So I'm kind of feeling inadequate now, actually, but as my YouTube channel implies, cheap skating is kind of my niche here. And, I really wanted to, in order to save a lot of money, I wanted to make every lesson as effective as I could. In terms of like before each lesson, I think one of the there are a few things I did. One, I would always make sure I knew what our next lesson was going to be about, right?
Which I didn't. I didn't do that because I didn't know they were going on a syllabus, and that took longer because of that.
Sure. And honestly, some people talked about this, how they would have liked to have had more structure. And we also talked about how you want to have control over your training. And I think I went perhaps to the extreme of having control over my training, where I mostly knew what the next lesson was going to be about, because I was mostly the one deciding what the next lesson would be about. Which I think was very good to own your training. Sometimes I wonder if maybe I could have benefited by like letting my instructor lead a little more, because here I am thinking, well, I've watched every YouTube video about flight training, and I've read all this stuff, and I could be my own CFI. You're just here for legal reasons, right? And obviously that's not the case, right? I was a beginner just like everyone else, despite all the preparation. Take a step back. So I try to decide with the instructor at the end of each lesson, say like, okay, what are we going to cover next time? And then I'd practice that in a simulator. I would read. I try to study up on whatever I'm about to do. And I think probably what helped me even more is make sure that I reviewed the previous lesson once or twice on video. So I recorded all my lessons. And to me, I think the audio was the most important. So yeah. I would, as I'm driving to the lesson, I'd usually be listening to the audio from my previous lesson. And then I'd try to, listen to it once or twice between then, sometimes in the shower, just like listen whenever you can. Sometimes my wife didn't really like that when I'm up early and she's still sleeping and I'm like blasting ATC audio in the bathroom, but try to listen.
What did you do for your radio skills? Were, we'll get to this a bit, but your radio skills were good in the beginning. You knew terminology. Was that all from VATSIM?
So I didn't do VATSIM or Pilot Edge. I tried VATSIM once and I couldn't figure it out. But there was a lot I would do to practice. So I'll admit I did a lot more in the early days than I did later, because I think I started thinking, wow, I'm good at radios. I don't need to do this anymore. And then I kind of plateaued. But I would I just practice a lot during the day out loud. When I'm driving, like before I pull out the driveway, I'd say, Fox Ground, this is Avalon 123, request taxi to the street, or whatever. And even sometimes just kind of thinking like, okay, I'm about to enter the highway. Let's get flight following on the highway or whatever.
And then you're late for work and you tell your boss I couldn't get a clearance.
I got vectored all over the place. Yeah. To study the phonetic alphabet, I just like, while I'm driving, if I see a sign, I'm just going to like say all the letters on the sign phonetically. Yeah. Just things like that. Just work it in throughout your day, say stuff.
And I did a little bit of that, but I also listened to live ATC, on the radio, or put it through my Bluetooth in the truck and listen to that. And just typically through osmosis, you start kind of picking up on the lingo, but I would do the same thing with the kids in the car when I would be taking them to school. I would be doing radio chatter like that, and they got a kick out of it.
So I found live ATC wasn't the best because it tended to be just a lot more, checking, listening to approach type calls, not the type of calls that I was going to be making as a private pilot.
I would listen to a PDK tower. Mm-hmm. When I was doing private and when I was doing instrument, I would do a Chattanooga approach or Birmingham approach, because I wanted to hear those, picking up the clearance and then the PTAC. So to your point,
but for VFR, right?
For VFR, I would listen to the towers and get their lingo down.
But to generalize this, I think what is important to sort of highlight to somebody that's just considering all of this and trying to get their heads around it is just to say, not only do you need to try to fly, book three lessons a week or four to get two and hope that you get three, that's a time commitment unto itself. But I think even further, everything you're hearing everybody say right now is basically, you're living this, you're breathing it, you're right. practicing, you're chair flying, you're doing practice calls, you're driving your family crazy, you're doing all these things. And so that's, if there's a ratio, it's probably, you know, 4 to 5 hours of preparation and studying for every hour of flying or something, you know, it's if you're doing it right, that's what it, you know, but ultimately it's fun and it's kind of, it becomes an obsession. And then, you know, once you're addicted, it doesn't really feel like such a sacrifice. It's that's just exactly an imposition right. on everybody else in your life.
Again, it's the whole point was to get those 0 hour pilots. And, you know, this is just kind of an intro as to what you're going to be facing.
Well, hey, Nate, I wanted to say real quick, if you were to give somebody in the name of being cheapskate aviation, what would be the most specific thing that you could tell somebody that doesn't know what they don't know about how to save the, what has the most savings attached to it? What's the cheapest thing they can keep in mind?
Sure. Yeah. I would say that the big thing is to focus on anything you can do to make your flying hours efficient. Cause it, you know, if you save $20 cause you didn't have to buy a book, like, great. That's like 10 minutes of flying. Right. So, yeah. You know, all the little things you can do, sure, they add up to a little bit, but, if you can just make sure that every single lesson is like getting you a step closer, to checking off boxes and make sure that you're learning as much as you can every single minute, that's going to be the main thing to focus on.
And one thing I just want to throw in there real quick too, is people get real, I know people that have not finished their training that went all crazy and bought Bose headsets and I don't know, like all the accoutrement and all the stuff. You don't need any of that stuff. There's gonna be a lot of people telling you need a lot of things and you really don't need almost anything to really get deep into it.
Yeah. I rewarded myself later by upgrading, you know, from a basic headset to something fancy, you know, right. It's like, you don't have to get that all day one.
And you don't need to get anyway. Ben started us off tonight telling us the joys of going back to David Clark's with no ear cover.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
You gotta ground yourself every now and then. I mean, you know. We have a bag of words segment this week, don't we?
Yeah. Well, bag I think that was a good chat about midlife flying 101.
Bag of words.
You know, Ben and I were talking about this, and it's a great I think there's a couple of you know, pods that we can have on the same topic, kind of getting a little further into it. But we really wanted to focus on that. You know, what do you do before you start flying and what do you do in those first hours and what to expect? So, and we're also not instructors, but
No.
So,
bag of words. Sorry, Brian, I messed that one up.
Bag of words.
And we have our friend Nate has contributed to this effort, I believe. Do we have.
So now all that talk about how I mastered radio.
Yeah.
I'm losing all my credibility. The opposite of everything I said.
Nate, all it means is that not everybody's perfect, that we all make mistakes. That's it.
Even Nate. Yes.
Even Nate makes a mistake every now and then, not that often.
All right. Do you want to, do you have any context for this? You want me to roll into it, Nate?
Sure. Yeah. So this is on, I think it was my fourth flight lesson. So it's pretty early on. And usually after landing at Fox Airfield, they almost never transfer you over to ground. So they said, you know, usually just say the taxi, this frequency to fuel or whatever. Well, on a previous flight, my instructor was handling the radio and he said, oh yeah, we'll take Alpha 4 or whatever. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. I should tell them like what taxiway I'm going to take. Only problem is I had no idea like what taxiway was next. So I started like trying to say, I'm like, oh, we'll take, and I just said something completely like unintelligible.
All right. Let's show that.
Cherokee 3 Whiskey Papa, taxi to parking this frequency. We'll take we'll take off 4. 3 Whiskey Papa. That was embarrassing.
Just taxi with this frequency is all you got to say.
All right. Okay, number 3 Whiskey Papa, second.
Taxi this frequency,
3 Whiskey Papa.
I love, say again? Basically, what was that?
How could you, replied with you? How could you not hear that the first time? That was so clear.
Like I said.
That's right, yeah.
My favorite thing about that is how you tried to you did a pretty good job. It wasn't good enough, or actually you may just, you oversold it a little bit, but you kind of just went into the ambiguous, you know, sort of speech and just thought that it would kind of just float through into sort of like a,
it like sounded a, like a response. There were no words in it, but the shape of it was correct.
Instead of a word,
to be fair, half the radio calls you listen to, you can't pick out the individual words.
Can we listen to it again?
Yeah. Let's roll into that again.
Cherokee 3 Whiskey Papa, taxi to parking this frequency.
We'll take a. Dang, I'm going. We'll take all 4. 3 Whiskey Papa. That was embarrassing.
Just taxi via. Taxi with this frequency is all you got to say.
All right.
Okay, number 3 Whiskey Papa, second.
Taxi this frequency.
Taxi this frequency, 3 Whiskey Papa.
Yeah, and that take alpha 4 to me sounded like take off 4 something. And yeah,
that's so good. I just love how you just try to be like,
it almost sounded like the air pump pot, and we'll be taking off.
Yeah. No, it's so relatable though. I now when I get a call like that, you know, where it's like, oh, you give me a taxi instruction, I've got my hands full. Taxing to the runway or landing. I've had both of those. And now it's like, yeah, no, I'll come back to me with that. Yeah. Right. I know I'm not going to remember this.
So. What I love about it is you had a smile on your face. The people in the audio podcast are, this is primarily audio, and they're not going to be able to see that video. Your expression is like a kid having at the fair, right? Like you're having the best time just failing miserably at whatever you're doing. at least for that moment. And that's what I draw from it is like, wow, what a perfect example of kind of what I wish I would have embodied when I was at that stage, you know, cause I was just hard on myself, you know? So to see you taking it so well and having fun with it and all that, you know, I think that's the ultimate reminder for everybody on all fronts for everything is the reason why you do all this financial hardship and sacrifice and time and energy and hurting your brain and doing all this stuff is because it's fun. So that's what I love about it most.
Absolutely. And so this is the time to remind everybody, if you have a moment of clarity there or not clarity on the radio, give us a shout. Let us know about it. We'll bring you on if you want to explain yourself or defend yourself, however you want to position it.
How do I get my bad radio work to you guys, Ben?
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to get to.
Oh, sorry.
You can email us at midlifepilotpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us your bag of words. You could send us your feedback, your thoughts, poetry. You want to invite to the Discord, we'd love for you to join us. We'll take care of you there. But hit us up, let us know. So awesome. Nate, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Nate.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you're for the audio listeners, please feel free to join us live on YouTube Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern. youtube.com/@midlifepilotpodcast. What are we leaving out, Brian? What am I forgetting?
The link for our Spotify support page is in the description anywhere that you're consuming this, most likely or will be. But it is a way for you to directly support the effort of this podcast. There are some costs associated to it other than just your souls. And so you can click on this link and you can very easily give us 99 cents a month. You know, look, I'm not trying to make this like some Sally Struthers thing, you know, but kind of that, but 99 cents a month, will go a long way. And if we could get, you know, even 5% of our listeners to do that, it would really help us, to invest in, you know, infrastructure or things or just get wasted or whatever it is that we want to do.
We're putting it out weekly. So that's about 24 cents an hour.
Yeah. So that would be the only other thing I can think of that we're leaving out is that you can support us monthly and that link is in there. And then otherwise just, if you can't do that or, you know, whatever, share it, put it places.
Let your friends know.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, and you don't want to share it, totally understand, but why are you still here?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And leave us a review on whatever device you're listening to us on, whatever one, Spotify, iTunes. We would appreciate a 5-star review. So
as our friends say, it's actually not possible to leave less than a 5-star review in there. So make sure that it's 5 stars or it won't be accepted.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Oh, look at that. Todd Stouffer did the math. It's 24.75 cents per episode.
Wow. Per pod. That's about 24 cents an hour. Yeah. yeah. So this has been episode 42. And on 43, I think what we're going to talk about is cross-country planning. We're going to make a little cross-country planning 101. Not going to try and cover everything, but just enough to get you started. As a newer pilot, when you're thinking, I've only been, you know, the minimum number of miles away from my airport.
Yeah.
How do I spend a weekend away? How do I go 250, 300 miles?
How do you do the thing that is the whole reason you did the whole thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Got the midlife taken care of. Now we'll take care of the flying part of it. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Well, thanks guys for potting with us tonight. And to the viewers on YouTube, thanks for joining us tonight, and we will see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.